You're listening to the Own a Build podcast, where each week, Paul Hemming from C-Link interviews experts on how small and medium-sized developers can level up their business through intelligent construction management.
So, Jason, you will know that Liam is not here today, and you are stuck with my less than dulcet tones. I have effectively been handed the keys to the podcast. And today it will be just me and Jason, Jason Farnell, who is joining us again. And sadly for me, Jason is joining us from his impressive new home office, which he showed me not too long ago. But it's also a home office that comes with, how are we going to describe it, Jason? A lad's room, a playroom, a boy's room? What are you calling it?
Games room, yeah.
Games room.
It is the games room.
And what have you got in there?
We've got the bar billiards, the dartboard. Haven't yet got the backgammon over here, but I think that's enough to be going on with, enough to play with. Oh, and the dance set. Got the dance set and the vinyl in there just to spin a few singles.
It sounds, you're making me more and more jealous every time you tell me more about this this setup you got. And has it been, I'm guessing, given that it's March 2021 and COVID is still here, it hasn't been properly christened, just you giving it a
just some running in, if you like, just a bit of light use just to test all the amenities. Yeah, make sure the beer's cold in the fridge if there is any beer.
Well, the brew dog order's coming, if I remember correctly.
It's on its way.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I'm very jealous, as I've told you before, but good for you, Jason, that you've got that all set up at long last.
Yeah, at long last.
Yeah, so today we wanted to focus on vesting certificates, of all things. We typically do a really focused scenario with you, Jason, where we say a specific case on a specific project and we explore that. This time round, it was more to think about vesting certificates in a bit more generically, because there's so many different contexts where they could be used. And to give us some place to start, let's imagine that we are a property developer acting as a principal contractor, and that we are regularly being asked by our subcontractors, by our suppliers, to make advance payments for materials offsite, wherever really. And it's easy for us to understand the need for this, but we want to make sure that we're managing the process in a low risk way, always doing it as we should. And really, I mean, there's many means to do this. I've heard about stage payments, I've heard about advanced payment bonds, there's all kinds of different bonds, but the one that keeps on coming up is vesting certificates. So what exactly is a vesting certificate? When should I use it? Tell me about it.
Okay, well, vesting is the literal meaning is to clothe in legal entitlement. When you vest something in somebody, you're transferring ownership to them. So that is what a vesting certificate is all about. They're distinct from advance payment bonds or other forms of on-account payments and things, because a vesting certificate is specifically aimed at goods. And typically, say, if you had precast concrete planks or precast concrete beams or something that were being manufactured off-site, and clearly you're not in a position to take them because you're perhaps in the ground, you're doing piling and pile caps. There's nowhere on the site because that's all taken over with the excavations and stuff. But you need these things to be ordered and start to be paid for, because obviously they're expensive items. And that's a classic situation where you'd entered into a vesting arrangement with the manufacturer.
Why use a vesting certificate instead of an advance payment? What's the nuance between the two?
Advance payment is, it might be, say, look, I've got to do some design work, or I've got to commit to purchase some raw materials and I need some money. Whereas a vesting certificate is specific to the items that you're manufacturing. For the sake of argument, if somebody were to approach you and say, look, you want me to provide a load of sawn timber in various lengths and various thicknesses, I want a vesting certificate. It wouldn't apply in that case, because you've got to be able to uniquely identify the goods that the vesting certificate applies to. So if you had a pile of timber, you could sell it to me, you could sell it to the next guy, you could sell it, and the description will be exactly the same. And when you come to look at it, you'd say, well, that pile of timber looks much the same as the pile of timber that you apparently sold to the guy next door. Whereas if you say you've got these, going back to the precast concrete beams, which have been designed specifically for your scheme, which suit the loadings, match the engineer's drawings, you can't use them anywhere else other than the scheme that you've drawn them for. And so
they're specific to my project and my needs. So
exactly.
And so then you can vest them into my ownership is what we're saying.
Yeah, that's right. You're transferred in the ownership. But it's the process when you talk about it is quite convoluted, but it is for good reason that you've got to be able to clearly identify the goods as being for your scheme. So by reference to drawings or by reference to a unique job number. So you might have to go to the manufacturer's works and say, right, fine, where are my planks? How do you identify them in your system when you're doing the manufacture so that you can tie up precisely with the units that you have had manufactured?
Sadly, when I was a junior trainee QS working for a curtain walling contractor, we were doing vesting. It was for an offsite. It was for a project where we were doing a lot of materials, producing a lot of materials offsite for a bomb blast materials that had to be delivered just in time. But obviously, we needed to create a backlog. And there we had specific panel references taken off the drawing. So panel reference EWS 01.1, EWS 1.2, and I had to be in my junior level at that time, the person to actually stick on the materials, this property is the ownership of our client at the time, and it is this, this, and this. And then we were paid specifically for those materials alone.
It's funny that you should say, as a junior surveyor, this is what you were given to do. And I think you're probably right. It would be passed down to a junior, but you can't underestimate how important it is to get this right. Because
are you saying I was getting it wrong, Jason?
I was saying you were getting it wrong, but I'm saying that they give you a lot of responsibility in terms of identifying the stuff, because it's got to be A, identifiable, so that you can say those are my goods. If the manufacturer went bust, I've got a certificate here to prove they belong to me. They've got to be stored appropriately so they don't get damaged. It's no good saying, oh, I've been to see the stuff, and then the next day said, oh, well, I reversed over it with a forklift because it was just in a corner of the yard. So it's got to be put somewhere appropriate. It's got to be insured. It's got to be labelled so that when you go back and say there's no question about it, those are our goods. So getting all that right, to vest that responsibility in a young trainee surveyor. A young trainee surveyor, they must have thought very highly of you, Paul.
You've managed to wangle your way back into my good books here, Jason. I wasn't quite sure how you were going to do it, but you've managed to do it. I guess we have to recognise that we're talking here as QS to QS, right, Jason? And perhaps we're already getting a little bit technical here, and some people will start thinking, what on earth are they going out on about in terms of the certain nuance and jargon that we're using? I guess primarily my question would be, given that we're trying to consider the SME style developments here, what is the benefit of considering a vesting certificate, and how could you use it intelligently as leverage or as a way to reduce your cost? Is that something that you can do?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff packed up in that question, because unfortunately it's about failure. If a supplier were to go into receivership, and you know the administrator closed the gates and said nobody's coming in until I get an assessment of what's in there, then having a vesting certificate would say, well, actually, I've paid for those goods. You can't just lock me out of those because they belong to me. The downside of not doing it is if you didn't have any proof and you've passed the money across without any security, effectively, your claim isn't recognised as being the owner of those things. You'd have to go and pay for them again. You'd have to go and arrange for another manufacturer to make them. So the downside is you might end up paying twice for the stuff.
Yeah, so I guess it's a really good way. If vesting certificates are something that you can do, it's a process that you know and that you understand and that you think you can manage well, then they are a very good way to say to contractors, look, we can, as part of perhaps trying to negotiate better economies on the overall price, you can say, look, we can do vesting of your materials offsite. We're happy to do that. That will help with your cash flow. That will bring through forward payment by 30, 60 days, whatever it would be, rather than paying you when the materials are on site. So for that, it's a very positive thing, and it can actually help you to drive down your overall construction cost. Where the pitfall with it, if pitfall is the right phrase, is more that you have to manage the process correctly, because if you're paying for materials offsite, you need to have absolute clarity exactly what you've paid for, and then that you own them and that you can access them. Because if you don't, and if they're not insured, etc., many things could happen that could then mean that you actually have to pay for them twice.
Sure. There's no substitute for having the stuff delivered to you, to your premises, and having them under your control. No doubt about it. But if, for the sake of argument, you're on a tight site, as you said, with just-in-time deliveries and that sort of thing, then clearly, you know, you're not going to be in a position to do that. But it is also in instances where, say, you need to order something like lifts or curtain walling panels, which you're not going to be in a position to do, but the manufacturing period might be 9 months, then it's no good waiting until the site is in a position to receive them, because otherwise you're just extending the duration of the project. So you need to be able to acquire them and pay for them at the time that gives the manufacturer opportunity to make them for when you need them on site. So it has got a lot of uses.
And so it is useful regardless of, I mean, we've talked about curtain walling, we've talked about precast, we've talked about lifts, right? There's lots of different products which we know have big, long lead times, and there's you want to secure them and you want to get favourable terms. So is it fair to say then that the vesting certificate isn't always the most appropriate, and you need to have the team around you to manage it, but there are going to be lots of cases where you're asked to pay for materials upfront and in advance, and it is the safest way to do it, would you say, or the best way to do it?
For manufactured goods that are unique to your site, yes. Curtain walling is an interesting thing, because if you've got a panelized system where the panels are unique to your job, that's one thing. But if you were buying a stick system where all you're buying is miles and miles of components from the manufacturer and the subcontractors assembling them on site, those components, by definition, they could be used on any number of different sites. So, and that is where you start to get into that is appropriate for vesting, but the stick system, that's not, you know, because it's just, and then you're into, well, you know, there's a demand for these things. If I don't get an advance payment, then you're not having them, or you'll be going to the back of the queue. And that's when you might start to look at bonds or even getting renting areas, on big schemes that quite often happens, offsite storage area, and so that you bring them into your control, and you know, when you need them, they're there, rather than being at the mercy of the manufacturer or the supplier.
Okay, and so just to kind of conclude this little section, really, what we're saying is that vesting certificates are very good, perhaps more appropriate when it's a more bespoke product that is totally bespoke to your project, and it's easy to identify that. So you've got to have that in your armory to be able to do it. But payment bonds or advance payments can be used where you're looking to perhaps secure more like bulk materials or something like that. That for that, it's more appropriate to use the advance payment.
Yeah, I mean, if for the sake of argument, you wanted to have quarry from a stone from a particular quarry, and it's going to be dressed and fit on site, say it's a random rubble sort of construction, then it's just a bulk of material. But the quarry owner might say, well, if you want this stuff from this particular quarry, you've got to start to fund it off-site. And that's when you get into some other sort of arrangements.
I wanted to take a quick break from the show to share a message from our sponsor, Seelink. Seelink is software designed to streamline the process of subcontract procurement. It's a platform that helps SME developers and main contractors stay agile whilst replicating the commercial scale and savvy of large contractors. If you want to save a guaranteed minimum 5% against budget construction costs on your next project, head to www.get.c-link.com/podcast to find out more. If you're driving or working out right now and didn't catch that URL, don't sweat it. We've included the link in the description box for this episode. Now, let's get back to the show.
I said I wouldn't give you a situation, but I'm going to give you a situation, because one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this was because I was speaking to a property developer who is building this 10 to 15 million pound, this overall project, some very high-end apartments. And they started speaking to C-Link and our business 60 to 70% of the way through their project. Now, these very high-end apartments with all kinds of obscure products, high-end M&E, high-end granite, high-end marble, everything you can imagine to live in a house as lovely as yours, perhaps, Jason, right? The problem that they presented me with was that they had actually made significant payments in the hundreds of thousands, possibly in the millions, for various materials that were off-site, still hadn't been delivered, and they were getting very, very nervous about what was the best thing to do. Now, what would the best thing to do be in that situation? Would it be to pivot to vesting certificates? How would you manage that situation?
Sell your shares. Move up. I expect when you're talking about the type of materials you're talking about, there would be overseas supply.
I think some of them were actually national. Some of them were on the continent, yeah.
Some were domestic. So first thing, you've got to go to where the stuff is supposed to be and make sure it's really there. I mean, there's nothing, or when I worked with contractors in the past that had international arms, I mean, we quite often ring up the international office and say to people in the particular country, would you mind going and inspecting this stuff? Much as you'd send a Paul Hemming as a junior out, you'd send somebody to go and just see if it's really there. That's the first thing. You've got to build.
But what if it was unquantified? What if they'd just said, we need a payment of £50,000 to secure the materials and we'll be on site in... This is the situation. I've paid you in January £50,000 for some materials off-site. You're meant to be starting in March. You haven't started in March. It's now April and I've paid for the materials, have yet to see them transpire. What am I going to do about it? And it sounds like a daft situation, but this is a very real life.
I don't know. I've seen people do this all too often. I would hope that you've got some sort of security, either in the form of a bond or a bank guarantee or something. But if you just passed across money on effectively a trust basis, hopefully you're dealing with a company that is at least UK based or has got a UK subsidiary, so that you could pursue recovery of the debt. One of the things that I find surprising is how casual people are about payments in terms of certificates and paperwork to demonstrate what's been paid across. I had an adjudication this week and the guy is sending me bank statements to show monies that have flowed out and what have you, because that was the best evidence they had of what they'd paid across.
Wow.
But, you know, so,
it sounds like a similar type of situation here on the
statement. Well, you need to start to build an audit trail on certificates, letters, agreements, and anything that will evidence that you've actually paid it across. And worst case comes to the worst, you'd have to pursue that as a recovery of a debt. If you haven't put your security in place and you've not got what you've paid for.
I guess going back to what we were saying in part one of this conversation is perhaps a little bit green, a little bit naive when I've been asked, or we're going to deliver this granite or we're going to deliver these kitchens or whatever, but I have to have a payment in advance. And I've just said, it's in the contract and I've paid something. How could I have managed that differently? Should I have gone for the vesting certificate at the start? Is that where now we are actually saying, vesting certificate, or you've got to have a security of sorts, Otherwise, you are just...
Well, you're relying on trust and spending money out at risk with no security against it. If it is things like granite, which... If it were granite that were being made into, washhand basins that were unique to your project, that'd be one thing. But if it was granite for worktops that could be, then vesting wouldn't be appropriate. You're talking about raw material. In that case, you'd be looking at a bond or a bank guarantee. I mean, on-demand bonds, I read an article the other day that on-demand bonds are on their way back. And that is the type of thing where you'd say, right, fine. And the bondsman would put up a bond and you would have a legitimate call if the goods aren't delivered at the time when they say they would be. And you say, well, I've paid the money across. And that would be. But, I mean, in a situation where you've got no security, no vesting, you've got to start to build that audit trail to be able to demonstrate, because you may have to prove that you've actually paid the money across.
So the contract is for 100,000, and in the contract it says make an advance payment of 50%. So I've paid 50,000. Is that security that the contract calls for it?
Again, I've got an adjudication on my table that I've got to write a decision for before Easter, exactly on this, where the parties started on a letter of intent. Monies were paid across on the letter of intent. Then they entered into a JCT contract and they put in new articles to say that the balance of what they called, anyway, it doesn't matter what they call it, but the balance of a sum of money, which was due at the time that the contract was signed, was payable within 14 days from the date the contract was signed. It's still not being paid. One party is trying to say, well, actually, you know, I'm relying on the contract, it's there. The other party's throwing his bank statements at me and saying, well, look at all the money I've paid him, it's in there somewhere. And of course, I mean, I'm not being unkind to emerging developers, if you like, but they are quite casual. It's like, this is a case in point where the contractor's put in an application for, say, £150,000, and the developer's paid him 50 grand here, 25 there, another 10 the following week, nothing that matches up to the applications in, you know, discreetly. If you add it all together and say, well, it's in there somewhere. But that is quite often the case with, as I say, businesses that are growing, haven't got procedures, and are a bit casual in their approach. And if you're not careful, case in point, they might end up with having to pay twice for something they've already paid for, or, you know.
Yeah, it's a challenge, isn't it? I guess the takeaway, as I see it, is that whatever you're doing in terms of, if you're being asked to pay for anything before it is vested in your property, you have to have a security of some sort. Having it in the contract saying that I'm going to make an advance payment of 20% is part of the audit trail, but it's not actually going to help you out in the long run, because if you haven't actually got certificates or a bond, so a certificate saying that that material is specifically mine, or you haven't got a bond which you can call on to recover some of the cost, effectively with that advance payment of sorts, you are transacting X amount of money out of your business and taking a risk. So coming back around, I guess vesting certificates are critical, really, as a way to reduce your risk. All developers should know what they are and be able to use them. And if you're not going to use a vesting certificate and you're not going to have some kind of security, i.e. a bond, then you have to go in with your eyes wide open that if you are making an advance payment of sorts, it is completely at risk. Is that a fair summary and assessment?
I think that's a very good summary, Paul.
So you see, the junior QS, he's all right, isn't he? The junior QS has done okay. He's at least understood that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he must have had something.
I give up with you, Jason. I've tried my best over the years to try and impress you, but I still get dug out every time, don't I? I'm going to have to come round to that house of yours. I'm going to have to beat you silly at darts. And that's the only solution to all of this.
Well, I see you've got the board behind you there, on the other wall. So you must have been practicing.
I've got the board on the other wall. So I've been practicing, and I'm going to have to come round and Give you a good beating on the darts.
On the course.
Well, excellent, Jason. I think that was a really good chat, and I look forward to chatting to you in the future.
For the next one, Paul, which is a nuance, we need to talk about retention of title clauses, because they will come and bite people quite hard as well.
Okay, excellent. Well, I will make a note, and next time we chat, retention of title clauses it is, Jason.
Lovely. All right. Thanks very much.
Lovely stuff. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.